Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for May the 21st, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Tonight we have two special guests as well as the latest news from Washington, D.C. for veterans. Our first guest will be Mr. Adel Travieso, an Air Force veteran and now the chairman of a group called Green Veterans based in South Florida. Our second guest will be the director of the State of Arizona's Department of Veteran Services, Wanda Wright. But before we get to our guests, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Good evening, and good evening, everyone. Hope everybody's doing well this evening. We have another fast and full hour plan for tonight with two excellent guests and some news about the latest nominee for VA Secretary and some legislation moving through Congress, so stay tuned. I would like to remind our listeners that we are also a call-in show, so you can let us know what is on your mind as far as veteran issues. Our toll-free call-in number covering the entire United States is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And again, veterans, this is your show. So please give us a ring if you have any topics you want to talk about, anything on your mind regarding the VA, anything that might pertain to your particular circumstances regarding the VA. Give us a call, and that number again is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Our first guest tonight is Mr. Adel Travieso, a veteran who served 6 years in the United States Air Force. While serving his country, Adel performed many roles, including logistics, mobility, air freight, traffic management, and EMT. He served during Kosovo supporting the Alabama Air National Guard. As a civilian, Adel has been in management with various companies throughout his professional career. His expertise includes innovative planning, project management, business management, consulting, building science, and sustainability systems. And as he says, always thinking outside the box. He holds a master's degree in business administration, a bachelor's degree in alternative and renewable energy management, a minor in teaching, and several professional certificates and licenses. He is a founding member of a group called the Green Veterans and serves as the current chairman. He is always looking for ways to help his fellow veterans by advancing the Green Veteran mission and vision. He's an active member of the U.S. Green Building Council and is passionate about veterans leading the way forward in sustainability at home and abroad. So let's welcome Mr. Adel Travieso to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, and how are things in South Florida?
I'm well, Corey and Rich. Thank you for having me as a guest on your show to talk about the Green Veterans.
Well, thank you. It's our privilege. Can you tell us about the organization and its purpose?
Absolutely, absolutely. The Green Veterans was born in the halls of Everglades University, where I was working on my degree in alternative renewable energy management, which focused on primarily energy and sustainability. The co-founder, Brian Sales, who was a classmate at the time and an Army combat veteran, asked me, how come no one is teaching this stuff to veterans? And I said, well, maybe we should do it. So naturally, we saw an opportunity to make a difference for ourselves and fellow veterans. So as a class project, Brian reached out to the U.S. Green Building Council, where he met another one of our founders, a civilian called Jonathan Burgess, who was a member of the USGBC at the time and became our liaison. We told him what we wanted to do, and with his help, they didn't hesitate to help us and welcomed us into the organization.
I see. What are some of the organization's current projects?
Before I go into projects, our stated mission and purpose is we're dedicated to helping our nation's heroes learn about sustainable building, green living, at the same time helping to ease the hardship of military to civilian transition. And we like to empower veterans to become volunteer leaders in their communities. And the way we do that is we nurture the opportunities for them to get continued education, to network, become employed, do some engagement, and hopefully some green entrepreneurship. We feel that veterans are uniquely qualified for the green industry, and they should take advantage of that. So we operate under, you know, concept of sustainability. It's a buzzword, and it's very broadly used, but we interpret that to mean, you know, changing the way we perceive the state of wellness. That means personal, professional, environmental, and spiritual.
I see. And when you mention each of those components, what are some of the needs that you see in each of those areas, and what can you tell us about, you know, what your organization does?
Well, we veterans quickly realize that life outside the military is different. And although some things transfer easily, others do not. And thus, we often struggle to integrate. You go from being part of something greater than yourself to very often being, you know, stigmatized for serving. That's an injustice and a travesty. So then how do we start to value the intangible contributions made by service members? Or often we become part of a very transactional system where more often than not the odds are, you know, stacked against us. So every veteran appreciates the thank you for your service that we, you know, usually get once they recognize that we are former service members. But what does that really mean when you're marginalized and stigmatized often? So that thank you becomes disingenuous and sometimes cliche. So in the Green Veterans, we saw an opportunity to once again provide that purpose, motivation, and the direction for those veterans who seek it. And, you know, hopefully change the paradigm a little and possibly provide new ways for those veterans to lead. Some veterans degrade after their service, but others struggle. The fact is, veterans are hardwired to serve, and that becomes part of you. So how do we capitalize on this, you know, to create that win-win scenario with some of the questions we had? And then faced with that question, we devised a system of implementation called the Four Pillars, and it's how we've become successful so far, and it's how we operate and hope to become successful in the future. And it's basically just a system of integration divided into four parts, you know, reintegration, sustainability training, service projects, and trauma resolution. And this is how we decided to tackle the challenge.
I see. That sounds very interesting. If you could tell us more about, you mentioned earlier the term sustainability is kind of a buzzword. It may mean different things to different people. Can you tell us what it means in the context of the organization Green Veterans and its projects?
So sustainability, when we look at sustainability, and it is a very broad term, it's a very loaded word, but what we're really talking about is a way for you to be sustainable in all aspects of life, professionally, you know, by means, you know, giving you a path towards employment. And we usually like that to be the green industry because we feel that's a growing industry and it's going to continue to grow. And it's something that we should be taking advantage of. And not only us, you know, the veteran, you know, the Veterans Administration has come up with several programs, you know, the Solar Ready Vets, so on and so forth. So clearly it's an industry that's in its infancy, but it's emerging, so we feel like we should be a part of that. And then, you know, we want to create that personal sustainability by giving you the means to deal with whatever issues you might have. You know, where are you at now? Where do you need to be? Does that mean that we need to provide services for trauma resolution? Do we need to provide you job training? So on and so forth. And that's what the Four Pillars allows us to do, allows us to create those systems of sustainability for yourself. And at the same time, you know, our pillars allow you to serve the community and help that community become sustainable as well. And by helping others, usually you help yourself and start dispelling some of these stigmas that exist about veterans.
Well, I understand that you're in South Florida. Richard Hurley and I are also in Florida, but more on the West Coast. Could you tell us more about, when you mentioned briefly before, the solar power thing? You know, as we all know, residents of Florida, it's the Sunshine State, and there's more and more movement towards solar power. How does that maybe relate to projects that your organization is involved in?
So I'll give you a quick example. Yes, we are a sunshine state, but we're not collecting that sunshine as much as we should be. And that's for several reasons, political and lack of will on the part of some of the leadership. But that doesn't mean that we're going to take that lane down. So what we like to do is provide the low-hanging fruit into the industry, and that usually means providing you with industry certifications through our training program that allows you to get your foot in the industry. And then from then on, you can augment, and continue to develop your skill set all the way up to solar certification, where you can be part of this, emerging industry that will allow you to provide for your family.
I see. Could you tell us more? I'm sorry, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right. So some of the projects we're involved with, for instance, here in South Florida, we've taken on communities currently like Riviera Beach, Fort Pierce, which are undeserved communities, but allows us the opportunity to showcase some of these sustainability systems in practice, where we take a home maybe that's a 1935 bungalow, and then we come in, we do an energy efficient retrofit, and that allows you to reduce that energy consumption. And then once we get to that point, we take it in phases. Then it allows us to size a smaller solar system that will provide that path towards net zero, and try to do that all while helping these vets learn about the industry, but also helping the vets that live in these homes. It's kind of veterans helping veterans.
Right. Well, that's an outstanding theme, and I'm intrigued with always wanting to learn more about things like solar power. And you just mentioned a moment ago, if I understood you correctly, that you would help veterans obtain the training and certification to get involved in that work. Can you tell us more, kind of a practical level for our listeners, veterans who might be interested in finding out what does that actually involve?
So we like to start, like I said, with the low-hanging fruit, and that means we provide two certifications or two paths towards certification, or let's say three. The first one is energy efficiency. We allow you to become a HERS rater or test, for the BPI energy audit analyst certification, which allows you to do energy efficiency audits on homes. And then we also provide, through our partnership with the USGBC, LEED certification, which allows you to work some of these big projects that are going up, that are now being mandated to be green. And then ultimately, through our collaborations with organizations like Everblue University, which is also spearheaded by a veteran, by the way, help you find that path towards solar certification, where you can become a solar installer and start, doing installs in the field.
How long would it take if a veteran were to say, well, I don't have expertise in this area, but I'm really interested, and I'd like to get started next month? How long would it take for this training and then the certification process that you were just describing?
Well, we have certain time schedules, but usually start to finish, our first training program is about 6 weeks, and then the solar is probably about another 4 weeks after that. So you're looking at a month and a half to 2 months to get you ready to test for some of these certifications.
And where can veterans, where does your organization geographically cover? So if we have veterans listening, and let's say that they're in the South Florida, where would they go for the training if they were in California or Pennsylvania? Does the U.S. Green Building Council have other chapters, so to speak, in those other areas? How does that work?
That is correct. That is correct. The U.S. Green Building chapter, U.S. Green Building does have chapters nationwide, across the nation, I think 21 to 25 chapters, and that's really how we operate. We operate inside their umbrella. And certain trainings are always available through USGBC, and that's going to be the LEED certifications and some of the energy efficiency certifications right now, the only solar certifications that we're doing are in South Florida.
I see. And what will it cost for a veteran to go through this training?
So the energy efficiency and LEED training, we kind of bundle that up and make it a package. And that's usually about $1,300. And then there, the solar training from there off, you know, we use Everglade, we use Everblue. And their prices range depending on the certification that you want to get, you know, whether it's an installer or a contractor or so on and so forth. And those trainings range, you know, anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000.
I see. And I'm just looking at, you know, as far as veterans that might be interested, what advice would you give them? How can they get involved with your organization, Green Veterans, or if they're not in South Florida, other chapters through the Green Building Council? What do they need to do to get involved?
Absolutely. That's the easy part. You can go to our website, www.greenvets.org, fill out a questionnaire, and someone will get back to you. That's usually something I like to do as well, and I almost see all the inquiries, so a lot of times, you know, I'll be the one making that phone call.
Hey, David?
And then we'll connect you with a local chapter of the USGBC, and,
if they're from out of state.
In that industry.
Oh, that's great. Richard, did you have a question? Richard?
Yeah, I do. Adele, good evening, Adele. This is Richard Hurley.
Good evening,
I'm
Rich.
Just curious, is there any sort of financial assistance that veterans can get in order to complete your program?
That's a good question, Rich. So most of the training we provide is certified for GI Bill benefits. So if you have the GI Bill, you can get any of this training. You don't have to get it from us. You can get it from anywhere. But a lot of people don't know that you can get some of these industry certificates and the GI Bill will pay for it. And sometimes we get grants. And often we get donations, and we use some of those donations and go towards our training. The first class we did was free for all the veterans. I think it was 10 to 15 veterans that went through, and that was totally free. None of them had to come out of pocket for anything. So sometimes we like to use the model of kind of pay it forward. We mm-hmm. initially let you go through the training, and then when your money comes in from the GI Bill, you pay that forward, and it allows us to get another veteran through the program, so on and so forth.
Now, when a lot of these veterans complete your program, do they stay in the South Florida area, or do you see them moving further north up toward the Tampa area or Daytona, or do they stay down in the South Florida area?
I could tell you that we have green veterans now in Wisconsin working on urban farming with the likes of Will Allen up there with Growing Power. We have veterans in Puerto Rico working on ecotourism, and obviously, because of the storm, working on disaster recovery and resiliency. And then North Florida, we got some veterans doing veteran homelessness, helping transition VFWs and lesions to serve the new veterans. In Central Florida, we got guys working on waste remediation, and then and us not here. We're focused on energy and affordable housing. So, our program caters to whatever the needs are. We start to expand in different parts of the country where the needs are different, but they rhyme. So some areas may look to, implement a solar program, where others are looking to do urban farming. So our four pillars allows us to diversify and cater to the needs of that community.
Well, that's great. Adele, we hope that in the future you'll come back and be on our show and keep us updated, and we'd certainly like to help your organization by publicizing it through our show. But before we go, can you tell us again how listeners can find out more about Green Veterans and how they can get involved?
Absolutely. Go to www.greenvets.org. And you can get a lot of information there, fill out the questionnaire. You can also link to our social sites like Facebook, and we find that that's the easiest way to keep people informed of our activities and let everybody know what we're up to.
Very good. And thank you so much for being on the Veterans News Hour this evening. Thank you for all you're doing to help our fellow veterans, and we wish you continued success in the future.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much, Adele. Sounds like Green Veterans is providing excellent opportunity for our veterans. Good job.
We will thank you very much.
Continue to do so.
Good night.
Good night.
Now for our second segment tonight, our guest is the director of the State of Arizona's Department of Veterans Services, Wanda Wright. Due to Director Wright's schedule, we pre-recorded the interview last Friday, May the 18th. It's about 20 minutes in length, so Doug, please roll the tape of the interview of Director Wanda Wright.
It's my privilege to introduce our special guest today on the Veterans News Hour. Arizona Department of Veterans Services Director Wanda Wright is the third generation of her family to serve in the U.S. military. She has 3 decades of military experience. As a 1985 United States Air Force Academy graduate, Colonel Wright began her military career as Deputy Budget Officer with the Tactical Air Command at Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, with a follow-on assignment to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, Arizona, as the Budget Officer. Leaving active duty in 1990, Colonel Wright joined the Arizona National Guard. During the next 21 years, she served in various positions, including Accounting and Finance Officer, Communications Officer, Executive Officer, and finally as the Director of Staff for the Adjutant General in Phoenix. Among her many achievements was to serve as Air Commander of Operation Jumpstart from June 2006 to December 2008, during which she commanded more than 4,000 airmen on our southwest border. Colonel Wright holds a bachelor's degree in management from the United States Air Force Academy, an MBA degree from Webster University in South Carolina, an MPA degree from the University of Arizona, and a master's degree in educational leadership from the Arizona State University. Colonel Wright's military awards and decorations include the Legion of Merit, the Meritorious Service Medal with Oak Leaf Cluster, and the Air Force Commendation Medal. So let me welcome Director Wanda Wright to our show today. How are you, and how are the things doing in the great state of Arizona?
They're great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's our pleasure, and I know there's so many topics of interest we could discuss for veterans. If I could begin by asking you to tell us about your department and some of its programs and services for veterans.
Well, I'd first like to say we're living in exciting times for Arizona's veterans and their families. We're a state agency that serves service members, veterans, and their families through direct services. One of our first departments is the Veteran Benefits Services, which employs veteran benefit counselors who are actually dual accredited through the VA and American Legion. And these counselors assist our veterans with applying for their federal and state benefits that they've earned from their service. These VBCs serve in every corner of the state and virtually. We have a system that allows our veterans to actually virtually engage with our veteran benefits counselors. Another program we have are our memorial cemeteries. We have 3 of them located in Marana, Sierra Vista, and up in Camp Navajo in Flagstaff. And these cemeteries provide a beautiful final resting place to veterans in appreciation for their service. We also have 2 state veteran homes in Phoenix and Tucson that service the long-term care and rehabilitative needs of Arizona's veterans. That involves nursing, therapeutic recreation, social services, and much, much more. And I'd like to thank Governor Ducey and the Arizona State Legislature and the VA, because we've recently been approved to build 2 new state veteran homes in Yuma and Flagstaff. And some of the other programs that we have the Arizona Military Family Relief Fund, which provides financial assistance to military and veteran families that may have some hardships. We also have the Arizona Veteran Donation Fund, which assists programs and initiatives that benefit veterans and their families. And finally, we have the Arizona Veteran Supportive Campus Program, which addresses the unique needs of veterans and service members on college campuses.
Wow, that's quite a wide range of services that seem to supplement what the federal government is doing. Director Wright, if I could ask you, what are your goals as the head of the department in Arizona, and what are some of the big emerging issues of concern that you see for veterans?
Well, the department's ultimate goal is to create an ease of access for veterans getting to their benefits and resources. You know, our mission is to be the catalyst in response to the evolving needs of Arizona veterans and their families. That means we need to meet the need of every single veteran as they engage with us, no matter what they need. And that's from every era, from our World War II veterans who are still out there all the way up to present day service members. And looking into the future, and according to the VA, women make up 9.4% of the veteran population in 2015. Pretty soon, we're going to be up to 16%. And we need to start anticipating the needs of those transitioning veterans as these new generation warriors come into our care. We've already been working on veteran homelessness through the Arizona Action Plan to end homelessness among veterans, but we're seeing a rise in homelessness in women veterans, and we need to be prepared to answer that growing need.
I see. Now, we know that in the last 5 years there has been a lot of media coverage about the federal VA's healthcare system, and the wait time scandal at the Phoenix VA hospital received a lot of national coverage as well. How are things now, would you say, and what further improvements would you like to see in the federal VA as far as health care?
Well, I always like to make clear for everybody that we are not the VA. We're a state agency. But we do collaborate with them in terms of supporting one another for the needs of veterans in the state of Arizona. In terms of that partnership, things are going great. I have a great relationship with the three directors of the veteran homes in Tucson, Phoenix, and Prescott. And I'm also have a great relationship with our Veteran Affairs Regional Office, which supports the claims that I was talking about before. That said, there's a lot of work to be done when it comes to veteran suicide. That is a big concern that we all have right now. Nationally, 20 veterans die by suicide every day, but only 6 of those veterans are actually engaged in the VA healthcare system. There are programs in place within the VA, but for the 14 that are not engaged in the VA, there needs to be programs in place to connect those veterans to the right resource. Locally, we have partnered with all three of the VA healthcare systems in a collaborative called Be Connected. The goal of the program is to connect veterans and their families to the right resource at the right time. When people think of crisis situations, they associate it with mental health, financial problems, homelessness, and relationship problems. Be Connected is about connecting veterans to the services they need early enough to prevent them from feeling isolated and having suicidal ideations. Through the partnership with the VA and our other community partners, we're able to build on our community's strengths. We can intervene early and create a new layer of support for veterans and their families. So this past year, we've had over 2,200 encounters with veterans through our Be Connected program. Many of those were for financial help, VA benefits, behavioral health concerns, and housing help. Imagine if this effort wasn't in place for those families. The community collaborative effort works. I would like to see the VA use a similar model nationwide to better engage all of the veterans, which there's 22 million of them across the nation.
Well, that sounds like a great plan. Now, I know one thing that I've seen from talking with many veterans is the transition from military life to civilian life can be challenging and in some cases very difficult for veterans. So can you tell us a bit more about the resources which were available to help them make that transition from military to civilian life?
Well, you know, you're right. Transition is a very difficult time. You know, when we have our service members preparing to leave the service, their whole thought process is about making their way home or to a home, getting their kids in school, and they don't always make sure that they understand all the benefits and services that are available to them. So we have a great partnership with the Arizona Coalition for Military Families. And in having that partnership, we've created a web network called the Arizona Military Veteran Resource Network. It has thousands of resources in it tailored to what any veteran's needs may be. There's a matching tool that allows a veteran to enter their information and be matched to resources they're eligible for. These resources range from financial assistance to volunteer opportunities to mental health to employment and so much more. Another good resource is our Arizona Roadmap to Veteran Employment. This particular program focuses on helping job seekers from start to finish engaging employment. Governor Ducey has actually proclaimed 2018 as the Arizona Veteran Career Year. With that, we want to make sure veterans don't just have a job, but they have careers that they can flourish in. Another program is called SkillBridge. The goal is to connect transitioning service members to civilian employers. SkillBridge is authorized by the Department of Defense and it allows service members who are within 6 months of separation from the military to complete internships and apprenticeships with approved civilian employers prior to transitioning out of the military. There is no cost to the employer to participate, and the DOD will continue to pay the service member until they separate. That's a win-win for everybody.
Wow.
In Arizona, we have a statewide SkillBridge partnership that includes the active duty military installations and state-level partners with a focus on engaging employers to support those service members who are departing the military. Also, through the Arizona Roadmap to Veteran Employment, public and private sector partners have come together to form the Arizona Corporate Council on Veteran Careers. The council collaborates to identify best practices to attract transitioning service members while sharing programs within each organization that help retain and propel their veteran workforce to success. I think this is so important because corporations know how to speak to other corporations. And so they are able to use best practices and evidence-based research to be able to help one another attract veterans to their organizations.
That sounds like a great collection of programs there, because I know employment is such a huge challenge for many veterans. It's great to hear what your state is doing. Now, Director Wright, how can our listeners learn more about the Arizona Department of Veteran Services? And beyond that, how can they get involved to actually help veterans in Arizona?
So we do have a website. It's azdvs.gov. That's Alpha Zulu Delta Victor Sierra.gov. And anyone who wants to help veterans in Arizona should go to beconnectedaz.org and participate in an in-person or online class to see how they can help connect veterans to support or resources. And that's kind of a navigation piece of how people can help veterans. People can also volunteer at one of our Arizona State Veteran Homes, which supports and provides companionship for our residents, which, you know, they love people to sit with them and talk to them, and they love to tell their stories about their military service to people. And so we always recommend, if you really want to help veterans, you can go to our state veteran homes and just participate with our residents there. But any one of those ways, people can support veterans that we support. And again, our website is azdvs.gov, and you can find all that information on our website.
Well, that's great. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed on your website that there was also an opportunity, an avenue for those that can want to donate their treasure funds if they want to make a financial donation to some programs in Arizona. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have several ways that anyone in the state can donate, actually anyone national for that matter. But to get the tax credit, we have a military family relief fund that is a tax credit. And so, like many tax credits, if you donate to that fund, which is on our website, you can also take that state tax credit. And I just think that's a win-win, too, for anyone who wants to contribute to veterans services. As well as, you know, it's a vetted charitable program, and people always ask us, who should we donate to? We're not sure who to trust anymore. Well, you can certainly trust the Department of Veterans Services. If you give your money to any one of our programs, 100% will go to the veterans. So the Military Family Relief Fund and our Veteran Donation Fund are two opportunities for people who may want to donate.
Well, that's super. It just, in my own experience, that program seems to be something that many of your counterpart state agencies don't offer. And as you said, many people do have questions of whether, I mean, there are thousands of private veteran groups out there, charities, and they're not sure who they should donate, who's trustworthy, whether the funds will go to actually help veterans. So that's great to know that your department actually provides that. Director Wright, before we go for today, do you have any additional advice for veterans?
I actually do have a couple of tidbits. I always say, whether you're in the military for 2 years or 20 years, you served, and so has your family. And so there are many benefits and resources available nationwide, and particularly in Arizona. I feel like we do a really excellent job in serving our veterans. So veterans need to do their research and take advantage of the opportunities that are out there. You know, I often hear veterans say, oh, someone else needs it more than me. And that's not really the way to think about it. You're going to, you know, everyone has the opportunity. One veteran getting an opportunity does not preclude another one. You served your country, and now it's our turn to serve you. And I'd also like to talk to the women out there, women veterans who have served. I think often because they weren't in combat or because they didn't feel like they were veterans, that they don't come forward to get the resources and benefits that they deserve. We meet a lot of women who think they don't qualify. And so it's just not true. And we want to make sure, because they raise their right hand and they fulfill their duty, that they have access to those benefits too.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate that insight. Director, I'd like to thank you so much for being on the Veterans News Hour today. I'd like to thank you for all the great work that you and members of your department are doing to help veterans in Arizona, but as an example for the rest of the country as well. And we wish you continued success in the future. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Well, that was good stuff there, David.
Yeah, I was very grateful that she took time out of her busy schedule. Arizona, you know, does have a fairly large veteran population, kind of like Florida in the sense that a lot of people retire to Arizona, just like they retire to Florida. That includes a lot of veterans, but also there is a relatively large military presence in Arizona. People may serve in Arizona and decide that they want to live there after their service or retire there.
One statistic that she said that kind of struck me was the, of course, we all know that she said 20 suicides a day, and the number we've always heard is 22. But the number what she said, which was really shocking, was, I think she said, out of the 20, 6 are within the VA system, actually getting help through the, you know, whether it's the psychological hospital, but they're getting assistance, and 14, so that would be, at least two-thirds of which are not in the system, they're not getting help, and they're committing suicide, and that's a startling number, David. That really
that's
is.
Why they need to have these outreach programs that she was that she was alluding to, and that applies the federal VA as well, and I know the federal VA in the last year or so has made efforts to expand the psychological services to veterans who otherwise may not have been qualified, believe it or not, because they had less than honorable discharges, and that was excluding them from coverage. I mean, many people, they see people on the street that say they're homeless veterans, and they wonder, well, why aren't they getting services from the VA? Well, in some cases, maybe the circumstances of their discharge. Maybe they had post-traumatic stress. They got involved in illegal drugs, and they were kicked out for that reason. And then they lost any opportunity to have VA services. So that's part of many explanations. But now I'd like to just remind our listeners that you are listening to the Veterans News Hour on BBS Radio. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call. We've got about 15 minutes left in our show tonight. Our toll-free call-in number for the entire United States is 1-888-627-6008. Again, our toll-free call-in number for you to participate on our show is 1-888-627-6008. So if you have any comments either of our guests tonight, Adele Travieso of the Green Veterans, or Director Wanda Wright of the Arizona Department of Veteran Services, please give us a call. Back to you, Richard. Go ahead.
Thank you, David. And now for our third segment tonight, we have some news from Washington, D.C. on veteran issues and the VA. We've been looking forward to this particular news, and that is as of Friday, May 18th, President Trump said he intends to nominate Robert Wilkie, who is currently serving as acting secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, to become the next secretary of the VA. Mr. Wilkie, a high-level Pentagon official, has been the acting VA secretary since then-Secretary David Shulkin was fired in late March. David, what do you know about Robert Wilkie?
Well, his experience has been on the Department of Defense side, and as most of our listeners know, Department of Defense and Department of Veteran Affairs, two completely separate entities. According to Mr. Wilkie's biography posted on the VA website, in addition to being the acting VA secretary and now the nominee for the job full-time, Robert Wilkie is also the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. In that role, he's the principal advisor to the Secretary and Deputy Secretary of Defense for Total Force Management, involving issues of readiness, National Guard and Reserve matters, health affairs, training, and personnel requirements. So a wide range of topics. He's the son of an Army artillery commander. He grew up in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Robert Wilkie has more than 20 years of experience at the national and international level. During the George W. Bush administration, he served with both Robert Gates and Donald Rumsfeld as the Assistant Secretary of Defense from 2005 to 2009. He was also the youngest senior leader in the department at that time. Prior to his first Pentagon tour, he was the Special Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs and a Senior Director of the National Security Council under Dr. Condoleezza Rice. Mr. Wilkie also has extensive experience in the United States Congress, including service as Senior Advisor to Senator Tom Tillis, as well as counsel and advisor on international security affairs to the then majority leader of the U.S. Senate, Trent Lott. He had a 5-year tour as the vice president for strategic programs for one of the world's largest engineering and program management firms, where at various times he had program management and advisory assignments as diverse as London 2012, and the reform and reorganization of the United Kingdom Ministry of Defense Supply and Logistics System. He's currently a reserve officer in the United States Air Force Reserve. He's assigned as a reservist to the Office of the Chief of Staff in the Pentagon. Prior to joining the Air Force, he served in the Navy Reserve with the Joint Forces Intelligence Command, Naval Special Warfare Group 2, and the Office of Naval Intelligence. He's completed various professional military education programs and courses. He's also been involved whenever he worked in the United States Senate as a staffer. He was involved in helping shepherd the confirmation process for James Mattis, Robert Gates, Admiral Mike Mullen, and was responsible for the preparation of General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Croker for their multiple appearances before Congress in defense of the Iraqi surge back a little more than 10 years ago. He has an honors degree from Wake Forest University, a law degree from Loyola University in New Orleans, Masters of Law in International Comparative Law from Georgetown University, and a Masters of Strategic Studies at the United States Army War College. So, you ask me what my thoughts are on this nominee, Richard. Again, his expertise and experience is on the DOD side. There's really no past experience in the VA. And I know many veteran groups, they seem impressed with the fact, well, he's a veteran. Well, as we know from past experience, when we've had, you know, prior four-star generals that went over to the VA to lead the VA, that doesn't always work out. So I'm kind of I'm in a wait-and-see mode to see whether Mr. Wilkie is going to be able to effectively lead the VA. Richard, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's a huge organization. I think there are somewhere around 377,000 employees nationwide. So it's a huge job. And failure has seemed to be more of the way of the secretary than success. And we can only hope that maybe this time Robert Wilkie will have some success. I've talked to various groups, and they do point to his work in, with VA issues and working with Senator Tillis. Since he has been the acting secretary, several groups have been working with him on the SME program, which, David, you and I have been talking about over the last few months. And he seems very interested in that and getting that program right. We've been documenting the fact that that program seems to be a negative thing for our veterans when it comes to the VA.
That's a subject matter expert program involving Camp
right.
Lejeune toxic water cases, right?
That's correct. And,
okay.
You know, one of the other things that I heard was that he's a problem solver. And I made a comment when I first heard about Robert Wilkie as potentially being a nominee, and that is that if he's a, and I like to use the term lunchbox guy, and that's a term that we used to use up in the Northeast about the guys who go to work with their lunchboxes, and they don't go out for fancy lunches. They do their job and open up their lunchbox, sitting at their desk, and then go back to work. And hopefully Robert Wilkie is going to be more like that than a bureaucrat politician. You know, I remember talking to some other VA people who've been involved with the VA for a long time, and one of the comments I heard is that no matter who it was, when they got to that seat, and I think this I heard this about McDonald's, all of a sudden something happened. I mean, there was some huge expectations in McDonald's. And then once he got up there, he just was flat, and he turned into a bureaucrat. So we can only hope that that doesn't happen. So Wilkie, there are so many issues, not that there haven't been in the past, but it seems like today with the ramp program that's popping up and different other things that are coming up in the VA, that there's a lot that needs to be addressed. And who's ever going to, if Robert Wilkie gets the nomination, he's going to be getting the ground running. So that's what I've got to say about that. And I know we're getting out of time here, so let me go to some other news affecting veterans. This past Wednesday, May 16th, the House of Representatives passed H.R. 5674, a bill called the VA Maintaining Internal Systems and Strengthening an Integrated Outside Network Act on a 347-70 vote. In case you were wondering why lawmakers would select such a long title for a bill, apparently it's because they think the acronym, which spells out VA mission, is catchy and useful. The bill now goes to the Senate, where passage is considered likely. According to a press release from Congressman Phil Rowe, the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and I quote, "The men and women who serve this country deserve a VA that works for them. Over the last several months, we've taken great bipartisan steps to reform the department. And this legislation is yet another strong step in the right direction. It keeps our promise to give veterans more choice in their health care while building on our strong investment in VA's internal capacity. Additionally, the legislation includes funding for the CHOICE program to ensure veterans have continuity of care during the transition to the new, easier-to-use community care program established under the VA Mission Act. This bill also paves the way for a nonpartisan and comprehensive review of the department's assets. This review was a recommendation put forward by the Bipartisan Commission on Care and will ensure VA has the resources needed to serve our nation's heroes for years to come. Finally, the bill expands VA's post-9/11 caregiver program to veterans of all eras, providing equity for all generations of veterans and their caregivers. If you are interested in the details of this very lengthy bill, you can find that and more on the website of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, which is veterans.house.gov. Again, the website is veterans.house.gov. You can also find more on the Senate Committee's website, veterans.senate.gov. Again, veterans.senate.gov. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. And as you said, this bill, the acronym of which is VA Mission Act, passed the House overwhelmingly. It's now before the Senate. It's expected to be passed, and then on to President Trump, who's expected to sign it. It's a pretty massive bill. I just wanted to highlight just a few of its many provisions. You know, a big thing with the VA in the last couple years has been the health care, trying to improve the delivery of health care, making sure that they're properly funding the Veterans Choice Act, which allows veterans in certain circumstances to get their care in the private sector as opposed to the VA system. Well, this bill provides $5.2 billion for that. Not sure how long that's going to last. But it also removes the existing 30-day or 40-mile requirement that currently is before veterans that they have to meet. In other words, they have to be waiting 30 days or more or be further than 40 miles away from a VA facility to access the choice program. This bill proposes to remove that. It also expands access to walk-in community clinics. It's designed to make it easier for the community care providers to be paid in a more timely fashion, which has been another criticism out there that the community providers aren't getting paid. So the overall idea is to strengthen and improve the delivery of health care services for veterans, both within the VA system and then the private sector. Another very interesting provision, and we're about out of time here, is that it proposes to expand eligibility for the VA's caregiver program to veterans of all generations. Right now, the caregiver program applies only to post-9/11 veterans. And as a side note, this program has become, in the last couple of years, extremely controversial because thousands of people were signed up for it, and the program is designed to provide financial assistance to families for the fact that, in many situations, the disabled, the severely disabled veteran's primary caregiver is the veteran's spouse. And this program, though, has become more controversial in the last year or two because so many people that were enrolled in the program are now being kicked off the program. So we have that happening, and there's just reading an article on NPR today about that that's still a problem. So we'll see what this new law does and whether it even makes it, how it affects the caregiver program. Enough about that, though. Richard, back over to you.
Yeah, before we close the show tonight, and again, we're another quick show, David, we'd like to provide with our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free 1-888-823-7458. It's hours on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m., 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Any veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Thank you, David.
Yeah, it's been another quick hour. It's time for us to go. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to especially thank our producer, BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'd like to invite listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.